Blog Talk Radio.
I have talked to so many parents who have been wanting to hear this confirmed, and I am confirming it once and for all.
Mayor Bill de Blasio points to strong coronavirus data citywide and in the school system. Officials say masks will still be required, and the city will follow CDC 3-foot social distancing guidelines. The mayor thinks those will be loosened by September 13th, the first day of school. Parents will be invited to tour the school starting in June to be reassured of their safety from coronavirus. Right now, more than half of the city's roughly 1 million students are all learning remotely. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
I want to take a minute and invite you on over to the Love Shack. It's a little old place where we get together, explore fresh perspectives, eavesdrop on juicy conversations, and uncover the mysteries that nobody talks about that absolutely influences our relationship.
And we're Tom and Stacey Bartley. We are the hosts of Love Shack Live, which airs every Thursday at 1 p.m. PST, 1150 KKNW AM.
Yeah, come on over and join us. We look forward to connecting with you soon.
And let's go ahead and take a look now to alternative talk weather outlook for Monday. Pretty much clouds and rain today. High temperatures around 61, 62 degrees. Tonight, clouds and rain will hang around. Low temperatures dropping down to about 51. For Tuesday, much of the same clouds with light rain showers on and off throughout the day. Highs a little warmer around 63, 64. Rain will hang around for Tuesday night. Low back down to about 50. For Wednesday, we'll take a little break from the rain and the clouds. Partly sunny skies. High temperatures around 67.
Have something important to say? Want to help improve our world? Need to promote your business uniquely and effectively? KKNW is the answer. Our staff helps broadcasters and podcasters create professional-sounding audio. Bring your talent and let our experts help you craft a radio show or podcast that best delivers your message. Learn more at 1150kknw.com. That's 1150kknw.com. KKNW, talk variety that's live and local.
Are you ready for something real, raw, upfront, and honest? Then tune in each Wednesday at 2 p.m. right here for Love from the Hip. I'm spiritual hypnotherapist, master esthetician, and the host, Sakura Sutter. This show is unlike anything you have ever heard and was created to help others to help themselves. Hear me follow up with guests I have hypnotized and see how it has improved their lives. I will also spotlight amazing people from around the world, their skin tips, live readings, and answers to life's burning questions. Join us each Wednesday at 2 p.m.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail. Hey, everybody, welcome. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. We've got a great lineup this week for all of you. And it starts out with today. Just to give you a sneak peek before I say hi to Benny and Olivia is I had a very short interview with the gentleman, Norman McCall. And I had a very short interview with him on a very broad and important conversation. And I went through that interview probably longer than I needed to and then decided I've got to bring him back because his book, one of several, Take Charge, The Skills That Drive Professional Success, just hit me smack in the heart. Because what is it that we know about success that we're not talking about? How many success coaching things have you gotten that you didn't get before? But what happens when your career, and you don't know it, is in your hands? We're going to talk to Norman about that. But let me say hi to both Olivia and Benny today. How you two be?
Oh, I'm doing well. How are you, Dr. Pat?
I'm good. I'm kind of excited. Benny, how are you?
Same here. Ladies first. Olivia had the conch.
So I looked at the – I had a call with Ritika this morning, one of our fabulous new hosts, and I planned a meeting for next week, and I went to next week, and guess what? Next week is June.
Yep.
Okay. Was that a surprise? Was that just me?
You've had a lot going on in the last. I think you've had a lot going on.
I still have a lot going on.
Yeah, so it kind of got jumbled in there, and it is.
It got jumbled in.
Yeah, but it's all good.
It
you
is.
Do a lot, and we
okay.
appreciate you.
Yeah. Benny.
What?
You can tell Benny and I have been together like it's now going to. Somebody said it's 18 years. I'm not good with the math. Whatever it is,
we're
it's
up
a long
there.
Time.
Yeah, we're
it's
up there.
It's a long time. So here's what I woke up with today getting ready for Norman. Norm, I think I call him Norm. Here's what I woke up with today, thinking about success. I never thought in a million years, not in a million years, when I was sitting in my corporate job, staring at my boss that wanted to fire a woman in a very second downsizing in the United States, second one. Exxon was first, phone company, and I will say phone company because that's what they were then. They were pretty much second. And I remember staring my boss in the face as a downsizing that was supposed to be so equitable. It was supposed to give people the option, you know, that had years to leave and then give them a year of pay. People for early retirement. And I remember looking my boss in the eyes and she said, you've got to fire Nadine. Like, what? Yeah, she's going to be on the list to let go. And I said, what? I said, wait a minute, this woman has 29 years, 11 months service. So you're going to let her go in December. So I said, you have a PhD, do the math. 1 month of nature. And she said, yeah, she's going to be on your list. I said, why? Why is she going to be on the list? I mean, this woman gets a full pension. What are you thinking? Now, I don't know if you people out there have had corporate jobs. That when you're staring your boss in the face and you are the head of the organization to implement this downsizing program, and you say to your boss, I'm not doing it, guess whose head count gets taken? So today, we're going to dive deeply into how we are faced with choices that we wouldn't be faced. But this has been just off for me, moving into a new place, almost like a new start, fresh beginnings. To finish off our technologies, and then I'm going to go here. I'm really going to go here, Benny, Olivia. I'm going to go here. The spiritual meaning of 2021's first eclipse is about transforming your mindset. This is the 2021 eclipse happening on the 26th. It's a total lunar eclipse in Sagittarius. It's the first one of the year. Feels a little bit of intense. Especially for me. But here's what they said. This is the mark in a period of a major change because this planet, this particular sign, revolves around communication, knowledge, and the spiritual meaning of this eclipse. But here's what it's about. You've got to transform your mindset. And I'm wondering how seriously important that is in the conversation with Norm today. In this world where we are looking at people that are being asked to go back to a normal that does not exist for them, that are now being asked to forget everything you've done in the past year and 18 months, the way you've set up your work at home, the way you've done the things that you've done to keep this organization going, we now need you to go back to the old way. Norman Bacall is a retired attorney and a founder of Toronto Law Offices, and by the way, you know, he has built and leads the firm. He became widely sought of expert in tax law, but besides all of that, he is someone that understands what it means to be successful, especially in the realm of, let me call it, media, Hollywood, Warner Brothers, Board of Directors, Lionsgate, producing the Hunger Games. He was in the middle of that. But what happened upon retirement? He took up writing, authoring. Today, you're going to hear about what is it about this incredible approach to success and professionalism that transcends the old normal that people want us to go back to. Norm, it's great to have you here.
Thanks, Dr. Penn. It's great to be here.
So, I don't know if you've heard this, but let's just talk about this for a minute, because we're going to talk about some of the biggest challenges that young professionals have today. But I would say that there are challenges that are about to come up that people have not even thought about. I got a call from somebody this morning, and I coach women, and the story is almost the same, Norm, over and over and over again. It's as if nothing has happened in the workplace. Zero has happened in the workplace. And now we just need you to come back. And by the way, probably going to cut your pay. Let's talk about the dynamic state we live in and how what you have prepared for us not only will accommodate that, but will help people rise up. And I know I'm not telling you something you haven't heard before about what's happening right now for folks, right, Norm? Or am I giving you news?
no surprise. You can't move, you can't breathe, you can't open the television without, you can't open your computer without being assaulted by it every day. And I think to approach this, I'm actually going to step back 18 months.
Thank you.
You know, so going back 18
months. I'd love you to do that.
I was having this conversation with my mother right around the time of the first lockdowns up in Canada. And she was saying, I can't imagine what it's like. And I can remember it. The notion that I would go outside and wear a mask, forget it. That I'd wear a mask inside, ridiculous. That I would, I still remember the last lunch that I went out for, I think it was in March, 15 months ago, and thinking, I couldn't begin to imagine the life I was about to start leading. And I think that was the point. It was unimaginable life, and it didn't happen in one day. And I think in the United States, it's been a lot more acrimonious and a lot more two-sided in terms of wearing masks, not wearing masks, how you behave, social distancing, things like that. Whereas in Canada, we slid into it more slowly. But within a few months, I was doing things that were unimaginable to the point where, because of the slow rollout of the vaccine in Canada, we're still locked down in Toronto and think nothing of it. Yes, there are a few hundred people out on the weekend protesting in the streets, but out of a population of over 3 million people, there are 200 people out protesting on the weekend. And so my point is that this life 15 months ago was completely unimaginable. That this normal that we are now about to come out of, and I think you're coming out of it faster in the States than we are, was unimaginable. So what I'd like you to do, and perhaps what I'd like the audience to do now, is do what's also almost unimaginable and think about what life might be like if not 3 months from now, then 6 months or a year. And I think what we are going to find out is that we are surprised that it's not so much going to be a new, I mean, people are talking about a new normal, and I'm not quite sure what that means. But I think our ability to adapt to changing situations occurs a lot faster than we can imagine. So what this new normal is going to be, I don't know, but I was speaking to a friend of mine in San Francisco last night who celebrated his 65th birthday, and he was saying, and he said it point blank, he said, it's as if COVID never happened,
right?
Other than the schools and the unions, teachers' unions basically putting their foot down and they're going back. He said, but other than that, you wouldn't know what we just come out of, which is, in some respects, it's shocking. In other respects, it just shows how adaptable we are, even though it's hard to believe we can be adaptable. So I think that's the starting point for all this. And then the mechanics of how you get your brain to accept it is, and how you deal with the anxiety of change is what I'd be happy to talk about. What I've written about.
Well, and one of the things that I do want you to talk about, because, when I'm looking at this, the book that you put together. And for those of you just tuning in, the book is called Take Charge, The Skills That Drive Professional Success. Norman Bacall joining me here today. You know, and I went back and I reread this, and I thought to myself, this is what we need, right? This is what you need as a person. This is what is great to learn. This is also what organizations need. And when I thought about this and I thought about, yes, this is the way to take the steps. I also know that if you are pushing a boulder uphill with all of the things you just talked about, right, it's going to be extremely difficult for you to be your best. And I want to ask you about this because I've been watching it all along. There have been service providers out there all along that didn't take a back seat, right? We're one company. You know, we've been able to set up all, I had to buy larger office space just as overflow just in case to make sure you've got the 9 feet, this and that, because service is everything to us. Where is this tension from your perspective between success, what some companies are asking of their employees now, and the ultimate goal? And it's got to be the ultimate goal, service. I don't know how you exist in the marketplace without being way above the curve. I don't know. Tell me, Norman, am I close or where am I? I don't know if I'm on track or not, but I've been thinking about asking you this question today only because I've had three separate circumstances that showed up with people thinking they're going back to the same job, and to be honest with you, getting cuts in pay that would just make you cringe. So help us out with where we are, because ultimately, isn't it about personal success?
Yeah, I can't talk about pay cuts and things like that. But,
no.
But, you know, I have a book where chapter one starts with, and literally the chapter is called It's All About Service. And really, in terms of personal success, the pretty much the only person you can control in this world is yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The only area where you can actually exercise complete control, and it's also our greatest challenge, is that space between our ears. And when you accept that, and when you, if you can accept that that the anxiety of change is being driven inside your head and nowhere else, and because it's being driven inside your head, you can actually control it and deal with it. I think that's the starting point for everyone to move forward. You know, the one thing we've discovered over the course of this pandemic is a remarkable resilience in the business community to adapt for survival, all revolving around how do we continue to serve all these customers, even though we can't see them face to face. And that's why we've seen a dramatic change in technological events. And those changes are going to, you know, those changes are going to drive the future. Those changes,
mm-hmm.
they're here with us for the future. It means greater access to people with less travel, less displacement, which also means more time. Whether and to what extent going to the office is going to mean going 5 days a week and how long it's going to last, and whether businesses can actually save overhead by encouraging their workforce to spend part of their time at home with the great new technology we have and the access to time that allows you to, allows us to sit face-to-face looking at each other as if we're sitting across the table. You know, that's part of the remarkable change. And the people who adapt the fastest to it, the people who are able to say, okay, how do I build that into my service offering, are going to be people who not only survive, but the people who are going to jump ahead and succeed. And it's out there. I mean, that's the great thing about America. It's, you know, the American dream is if you pick it up and you have the courage to run with it and you're not afraid to fail and fall flat on your face, you could conceivably beat everybody.
You know, and that's why I wanted to talk with you today, because, you know, there are three things that come to mind. I want to also step back a minute. one of the things that was extremely important to, you know, when I read your book the first time and then I got to chat with you is the, exactly what you just said. You have to be willing to take those risks and, you know, be willing to see sometimes when you're not successful at things. I mean, I had to go through exactly what you said in my first 7 years of doing this. I never thought in a million years that I would look at some parts of my life and realize that that risk may be seen as failure, but had I not done it, wouldn't be where I am. So I want to talk with you for a minute about how you come to look at success and the way you look at success, because I think we are not really looking at anymore, and that is success and soft skills. Can you talk to that and that philosophy that you learned and how important it is, even today?
Well, I think we start with the premise that success is not the product of only making great decisions and being right every day of the week. And I learned through building an organization that success, and this is looking back on it, I built a $250 million business over the course of 25 years. And it, when I look back on it, I figured about one out of every four decisions I made was wrong, which meant three out of four were right, which, you know, might have gotten me, you know, would have easily gotten me into the Baseball Hall of Fame batting statistics. But, and I still remember, I don't remember which business leader was that said it, and that is, you know, if you're better than 750, like if you're not making any mistakes in your decision making, it only means you're not making enough decisions or being too conservative. So it's ultimately it's about taking managed risks, always pushing yourself to try new things, and being prepared to say, okay, that was a mistake. And I think success isn't so much a product of always being right. It's much more a product of how do you deal with those mistakes. How fast do you handle them? How long do you let, as opposed to how long do you let them fester? You know, you hire a toxic personality into your group. You know, how, and because they're great producers, how long are you going to leave them there? And it's your choice as a boss or as an organization. But ultimately, you know, once you've discovered you're on the wrong path, get off it. Just get off it, figure out, you know, cut your losses, figure out how to deal with it, accept responsibility. And here are two words. I had a lot of trouble learning, but these two words changed my life. And also changed my marriage. They're called I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I still remember a phone call with a client where he was loaded for bear on the phone call. I'd done something that had really upset him. I let him rant for about 3 minutes, and finally at the end I said, Jay, you know, you're right. I'm sorry. I was wrong.
Yes.
And there was like a complete silence on the other side of the phone. And I suddenly heard him laughing. He said, you just took away all my fun.
You know, I love that you brought that up. And, you know, there is this ancient, let me just call it ancient, Norman, if I could. There's this ancient guideline in the corporate America that I worked my way up in. There's no crying in business. Right? That little story. I mean, how many times have you heard, you see, no crying in baseball? Okay. But that doesn't mean there's no humility. And there's nothing more powerful, I think, than what you just said. And yet, I think it's one of the most difficult things for, let me just generalize, professionals to learn that it's okay to say that. But
it's
not
a sign of weakness. It's actually a sign of strength.
Yeah. And isn't this part of, you know, when I look at the approach and the way you're working with folks and, you know, people that are professionals and coming out of the gate and, you know, looking for that success track. We're teaching them things that perhaps they're not going to find in that MBA book. So just, you know, that book that we all got, that book, big fat book. and you don't see it in there. But isn't part of this helping people look for and find those influencers, those people that can guide them to help them decide, who am I? I mean, didn't you have to do that? I mean, I shared part of this with me where I looked in the mirror and I was unrecognizable and I had everything in the material world you could possibly want, right? Full collie, big house, 4.6 acres, a sports car, a truck, an executive job, and I was getting ready to walk out of the house, Norman, one day in my beautiful foyer. And I looked in the mirror, and I just couldn't recognize myself. I forgot the girl from the Bronx and what she learned about people. Talk to me for a little bit about the influencers, who the people are that could guide us, and who have been the influencers for you?
It's an interesting question. And when I look back, I think that the people who had the greatest influence on me were the people who had no idea they were having the greatest influence. They were the people who came up with a little piece of advice that didn't mean much at the time they said it. But when I look back, it had a huge impact on every critical moment. We have those decision moments in our life when we can go direction one or go direction two, and everything that's going to follow is going to be a product of that decision. And it was something it began with my Uncle Harry. Okay, my Uncle Harry is a fairly well-known pediatrician in Montreal. And he was on his deathbed. He was dying of cancer. And I was all of 18 or just about to turn 19 at the time when I went to visit him. And he said, Norm, he said, I want to tell you two things. One, I never wanted to be a pediatrician. I wanted to be a gynecologist. But the opening for me came in pediatrics, and I just decided to take it, and the proverbial rest is history. And he was quite famous. He even won the Order of the British Empire for inoculating the troops going over to Europe and from Canada in World War II. I figure inoculation is a good time to talk about vaccines. But it was a radical idea at the time. But he said, Norm, he said, here's something I just want you to keep in mind. Your career, you have a choice. You can set a goal for yourself, but imagine that your career is just a boat you're putting in the river. Uh-huh. You have a choice. You can take the current and let it go when it takes you and grab the opportunities that interest you as you go by. Or you can pick a spot on the other shore, up current, upstream, and use all your energy trying to get there and never get there. He said, so that's your choice. And Uncle Harry's River became effectively the entire motto for my career. It was, you know, take the opportunities as they come. You know, it's not, you know, your success isn't going to be a product of waking up one morning with the next great idea that's going to change the world, or now as an author with the next great storyline that I'm going to write that's going to win me a Pulitzer Prize. More likely than not, it's going to be a slow building process of seeing opportunities and saying yes, and seeing another opportunity and saying yes. And that's what Uncle Harry was trying to tell me. I figured out 40 years later. But it was the saying yes as opposed to, oh, I don't know if I can do that. I don't know if it's successful. I'm kind of afraid I might fail and people might laugh at it. And that's the, no, I'm not going to do it. No, I'm not going to do that. No, I'm not going to do that. And I think if you interview enough people who've had extraordinary careers, they're the ones who say, I'm going to try it. Yes. And that was my career. I started out as what I call a boring tax lawyer who could give a speech and die before going into an interview like this. And slowly but surely, my skills built on the backs of all kinds of new things. And I saw them all as adventures. And some of them were, you know, in fact, were complete failures. And if you don't live through those, you don't live.
I love this. You know, we're going to take a short break, but before we do, Norman, please let folks know how they can get a copy of the book I'm referencing, but there are other books as well, how they can find out more about you. Because when we come back, I want to talk about two things that I think are really so significant, but in your book, they're connected in different places. One is about communication, and the other one is about building resilience and how these two peas in the pods, although they don't really look like they have anything to do with each other, can be enormous, enormous game changers, enormous. Let's take a short break, but before we do, Norman, how do we get the book? You've written other books.
All right. Easiest way to find out everything I've written, because I write both nonfiction and fiction.
Yes.
Fictions are mysteries. Just go to my website, Norman Bacall, and the greatest challenge is how to spell the last name. It's BACAL.com, and you can find all my books there. Or you can look me up on Amazon. If you just go to Amazon and look for Norman Bacall and Take Charge, or Norman Bacall, and you'll see all my books. And that's the way to get it.
And when we come back, why I so wanted to talk with Norman, for all of you so you know, is because Benny would say it like this. Back in the day, there were skills that mattered. When we come back, we're going to talk about how skills that mattered. Trust me, this is a number now, for real. 40 years ago, how those skills had been abandoned and how they're now showing up in some of the latest surveys being taken about the youngest generation to enter the workforce. And you will be shocked at what they are selecting over money, over benefits. But Norman has been talking about this because he understands the value of it, and this is something we all need to learn again. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
Welcome to Soul Activation Podcast, a world-class broadcast of insight and inspiration with the renowned healer and coach, Suzanne Alexandria. In this series, she dives deep into the magical sea of you, to the place in you that's ready to activate. Tune in live every second and fourth Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
In a roundabout of dysfunction, stop circling around difficult issues and find out what's been holding you back. Learn how to speak your truth to power with host Dr. Kathy Aubert. Create real change with smart tools and smart strategies. No frills, no fluff, just life-changing conversations to help get you where you want to be. Extend your reach and become an agent for real change with Kathy Aubert. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyaubert.com. That's drkathyaubert.com.
Tune in to the show Heart Change Consciousness with me, Dr. Trish DeRocher, as stories of inspired activism come to life. Listening to conversations with your favorite authors, change makers, and many more who practice inspired spiritual activism and transform vulnerabilities into sources of strength. Let's be inspired together through my show, Heart Change Consciousness, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Patricia McNair, host of Divine Guidance with Patricia, and I'm here to help you live a more authentic, spiritually connected life. Join me every first and third Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Being who you are in everyday life is the key to unlocking soul wisdom within that a whole self already knows. Get ready to embrace your spiritual, mental, and emotional well-being, your whole being. Discover your gifts and strengthen your connection to spirit. We will explore earth guidance, divine truth and love, past life lessons, and so much more. So listen in to Divine Guidance with Patricia and join in your personal adventure in triggering, opening, validating, and being all that you are. For more information about me, visit divineguidance.earth.
Time to get your life back on Burn Bright Today with Jennifer Marcinelli. Tune in each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn to move from the darkness of burning out to the light of burning bright. Jennifer is redefining stress and the energetic causes of burnout, shining a light on process to get your life back. For more information about Jennifer and her work, visit BurnBrightToday.com.
Welcome back, everybody. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. Norman Bacall joining us here today. When I got his book, Take Charge, this was a really short interview that I was honored to be able to do with him. And time has passed, and I've invited him back. When you open this book, and this is for me, I recommend this book for those of you out there that are thinking, I'm starting in a career. This is what I want to do. Even if you're in a job, just the way I was, in a job that you think, man, I'm in this job temporarily because I'm going to school for something else. This is the kind of book that you open up and nobody really has told you. You know, they haven't told you the importance of service. They haven't told you the importance of communication in the way that Norman does. But this isn't just about reading. What happens here with this book is you go through it, and you go through a conversation about how to reveal yourself. This is actually in his book. And you go through that. And then Norman says, so how is it done? And you're able to take this journey with Norman. Great stories in this book, by the way. Just great stories in this book. But they're real stories. They're stories and examples of how we go through life. So here's where I want to go with this right now, because communication is a two-way street, but also there's a link between, in my mind, communication and resilience. So here's the deal with the survey. Survey was done by a firm that surveys people coming out of school. And they do this because they're a recruiting firm. So they're working with companies, right, that are saying to them, go hire these people. We need these people. They're like, go hire the cream of the crop, or whatever they say. I did recruiting for a while. I couldn't stand it. But it's an important job. Here's what they didn't know what to do with. They do the survey of generation whatever they were. Recent graduates. This was about a year ago they did this, 18 months before the pandemic, actually. And they asked them, what do you want in a company? You're going out and you're looking for a job. Like, what are you looking for? They gave them like a ton of options, right, to look for. Security, a flexibility, a work hours, the whole thing. Now, Norman, you know the range, right? So do our listeners. What did they pick, though? Overwhelming. And the reason I attached on to this is because I did a study similar, but not with graduates. I did it with older population, not older in age, but older in tenure population. The answer comes back the same. So here's what happens. Their answer across the board, right at the top, we want to work for a company that understands empathy and compassion, that really knows what respect between people are. Empathy, compassion, respect. Nobody saw that coming. But you did, didn't you, Norman?
I'm not sure that it's that I saw it coming so much as I always, you know, that was always my mantra. And it's kind of interesting because if I go back to 1989, it was starting a new business in Canada's largest economic market against the advice of all kinds of consultants who said, listen, you can't possibly survive against the giants in the industry. There's no way you can compete. Unless you're prepared to be a small, unknown brand, which is fine. If that's what you want, go ahead. And I concluded, and I was all of 33 years old at the time. So as a result, maybe I didn't have that far to fall. although I did have four kids and a huge mortgage. But what occurred to me was I take the philosophies that mattered to me and I would start a social experience. And remember, this was, what is it, 35 years ago, almost 40 years ago. And I said, all right, I'm going to put a premium on people and I want a work environment where when you begin your commute in the morning, all you can think about is getting to the office. So that was it. That was the theory. That was the philosophy. It's what I lived by. I wanted to be excited to come to work every day. And I said, the moment I stop being excited, that's it. I'm done. And in fact, I lived by that. Because the moment I stopped having fun, I retired. It was all about that. It was about finding meaning. And what I discovered was that from a marketing perspective, and I didn't understand it at the time, it took me 20 years to figure it out. 20 years and all six. But it became our marketing mantra, and people gravitated to it. And if you interview the people, and the firm tragically collapsed year after I left management, we'll save that story for another day. But it did. If that is what triggered my writing career. But I think I've just lost my train of thought.
Well, I think where we're going with this is, you know, when you go through what you've gone through, and we're talking about this, something else pops up that maybe isn't on the checklist of what kind of attributes you need to have. I mean, the whole idea to do this massive study and to have across the board, right? I mean, these people were not coached into picking empathy, compassion, and respect. They picked
it's a generational thing. It's a generational thing, and it's different than your generation and my generation, where work was about work. And if you wanted to have a life, go home and have your life, but you're here to work. Whereas we've got an entire generation who is now equating meaning in their life to meaning in their workplace. And the people running those businesses who are in their 50s and 60s, they're not from that world. They don't understand it. And I think there's a general assumption that people are driven by money. And what I discovered through my experience and through all the recruiting I did over 25 years was just the opposite. And it was that people were not going to necessarily come for more money. They weren't going to leave because they weren't earning exactly as much as they hoped. But they would stay, and they would be extraordinarily loyal for reasons they could never understand. Because they felt a connection. It's like the gravity holding us all on the earth.
Yeah.
The gravity that holds organizations together. It's not about how greedy you are. It's about how connected you feel. It's about feeling that, you know, and I remember at points in my career, I said, I could never leave this place. Why? I can't explain it. But the loyalty just runs too deep.
Yeah.
And if you can create that in your employees, if you can create that loyalty, if you can create that, that feeling that, oh my God, I could never let Norm down by leaving. And I won't even take a call from a headhunter to leave because that would be treasonous. I mean, if you can create that, it's not because you're paying your employees more. It's because you've created something in their brain has created this loyalty as a virtue. And why? Because their work experience is bringing meaning to their life.
I tell you, we used to joke about the fact that we all had bell-shaped heads. We used to joke about that, but that was a very powerful meaning. And when you have an organization whose culture is embedded in loyalty, I mean, not dysfunctional loyalty back then, but when the game, when the rules of the game changed and the repeal of the psychological contract at work started to occur, that particular value, which was so important to the success of organizations, it's the thing that kept a graphic artist to stay an extra 5 hours and then get in his or her car and drive the presentation to the vice president who's at the airport, right?
It's very much about having a workforce where everybody believes, and it doesn't matter what level you're at in the organization, where you come to work in the morning because you say to yourself, I make a difference. And because the CEO at the top of the chain has sprinkled that fairy dust all the way down. You know, and I used to have this, it became a bit of a joke, but with my receptionist every morning, I'd walk into the office. In the old days when we used to go to the office.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'd say, you know who the most important person in this firm is? And he or she would look at me and smile, thinking I meant me, because I was the CEO. And I said, no, the most important person here is you. And they'd look at me, the first time I said it, they'd look at me like I was crazy. How's that possible? And I said, because you're the point of contact with the clients. And if they get on the phone or they walk into our reception and they see somebody who's happy and loyal and excited, they're going to get a feeling they're in the right place.
Yeah. Boy, I'll tell you, I learned that lesson the hard way. What did you say? You learned from your mistakes? I learned that lesson the hard way. And then once I learned it, what happened was things shifted. And we make judgments about people. But what you're talking about is an aspect of communication that I believe is so important, and I believe without it you cannot build resilience. And that's why I picked communication and resilience from your book, because there are other things we could talk about today. For example, none of this really works if you really have poor project management or poor detail management or no management, or you don't know where your emails are. I mean, we could talk about that. That we're assuming you get your act together and you figure that part out. But learning the kind of communication we need, the one where you say, I'm really sorry. I've had to say it more times than I can even begin to imagine. But doesn't that foundational energy create a level of resilience that goes beyond the profit line?
Well, for sure. And it begins with your starting point. I think so many of us believe that communication is about the message that we are sending out. And which puts the primacy on me, the speaker. Whereas, in fact, the best communicators are the ones who listen the best. And they pick up on the cues, and they say, oh, this is what you mean, or, oh, this is what you want. I can do that. But you can't do that if you're not listening. And sometimes, you know, and you mentioned the connection to resilience.
Yeah.
And for me, you know, I'm not going to pretend that wasn't the hardest lesson in my life. And how many times people said to me, you know, I talk about listening, but I can't tell you how many times people walked into my office and said, you're not listening to me. And it wasn't necessarily what they were saying, but it was sometimes things that I was doing that suggested the message wasn't getting through. And those are the moments where you have to be able to sit down and say, I'm wrong, I'm sorry, what can I learn from this? And it's not so much about me failing, because what the normal reaction is, I get my back up, I get defensive, and now we're fighting. Whereas if I just step back and listened a little more carefully, my resilience would kick in, and I can say to myself, I'm above this. I can deal with this. I can deal with change, and I will try and listen harder and better. And suddenly, you've opened a communication route, and it went to the people who work for me. It went to my clients. Like my favorite clients were the ones where I would sit there and I listen, and it's the same now, and I find the same is exactly, because I've become a consultant, to small businesses, to medium-sized businesses, to professionals, and they'll outline their problem for me. And at the end of almost every single one of these coaching sessions, I say the same thing. I say, you know what? Your question has already outlined the answer, and you know what it is. You don't need me to tell you what to do. You know what to do. You're just afraid of it.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that really struck me in listening to you speak is I get asked, more recently people are interviewing me, and they ask me questions about my interview style and type of questions I ask. And they ask me how I learned that. And it wasn't until about 5 years ago that I figured it out. I didn't really study it, but I stuttered as a teenager, you know, stuttered, right? And if you watch Joe Biden, you can pick it up too. If you watch me, you pick it up. And this weekend, it was really one of those situations where I was trying to do something with a couple of people, and they were asking me questions, and I didn't answer. And they kept asking me more questions, and it was so reminiscent of being a teenager. And what I realized was I was trying to figure out what they were asking, what they were saying. Because when you stutter, you know you're not going to answer that first question. Never. Because people will wait an average of 8 seconds for you to answer. And if you don't, they're on to the next version of that question because they think, right? And I find this interesting how this childhood defect now enables me to be able to put pieces of information together. But I may take longer to get back to you on an answer, Norman. And, you know, sometimes those are the things that we have to look at in ourselves, things that perhaps were defective that become our greatest gift. How does that play out for the people in the market today?
Well, you know, I think people see it as a weakness not to have the immediate answer. Whereas I think what people, clients certainly respect more when you say, if you don't mind, I just want to think about that before I respond. Like your question on its face sounds simple, but actually it's so deep. If you tell somebody what they told you is so deep, you've just gone up 100% in their books. You don't have to answer because you've told them what they want to hear. They're smart. So I mean, that's part of it. I mean, the other part is, and this is another psychological problem we all have, and that is we hate silence. The notion when I tell people when they're speaking, you know, when you're practicing speaking, after you make an important point, pause and count to three in your head. Because in that silence, you're actually having a conversation with the person at the other side so they can process what you've said. But we hate the silence so much, and we're in such a rush to get all our ideas out. We're not giving the people opposite us the time to process. And if you leave that time and you take your time, your message will be heard a lot better. And frankly, even if I had one lawyer in particular, because you had a stutter, I had a, like silence never bothered me, so it was an advantage. But I would sometimes sit there in a conversation and let 10 or 15 seconds pass, only because I had nothing to say. And a lawyer who I spent many years negotiating against said, finally came to me 20 years later and said, Norm, I always hated negotiating with you, because you always won. And the reason you won is because you just sat there and didn't say anything. I had no idea what you were thinking. And as a result, I rushed in to keep talking, and I basically kept giving away the points I wanted, only because I was afraid of the silence. So I mean, that's a gratuity. But the bottom line is you need to fertilize the earth of your relationships by just sitting there, being quiet, and listening. Listening is much more powerful than speaking.
Yeah. Norm, first of all, I want to thank you for today. There are so many things that you've put in this book as a guidepost. And by the way, you know, what you've done is put this in a way that people can not just understand it, but if they're drawn to something, they will be able to really find out more, and they'll be able to call you. But one of the things that I think I attached on to earlier, which is sort of for me, it's been a lesson, and it's a short thing in your book, and I think it applies across the board. You could probably substitute anything in it. It says, if you're drawn to technology, master it. And I remember this because I was drawn to create a network that was based on technology that worked for people. But I'm not a tech person. I don't claim to be. But you have to take yourself to a mastery level, whether it's technology, whether it's food service, whether it's, you know, working in a salon. You know, if that is what you're drawn to, master it. And I want to thank you for including that in the book, because it's so important for us not to just dream, but to take the action we need to the dream. Thank you for today. How do we find out more about you? And, of course, mastery sometimes needs coaches and help. Tell us about that, too.
Right. Well, you can either find me on LinkedIn if you're out there. That's the best place. Or just go to my website. And, in fact, unless you're in your car right now, take out your smart device or your computer. Just type in my name, Norman Bacall, BACAL.com. You'll find out all about me, and there's a way you can connect with me. I respond to every email I get. So,
and just,
well, don't think, why would he call me back?
Yeah,
again?
Exactly. Yeah, that's important to say. And also, give us a sort of review of some of the other books you've written as well.
Sure. My first book was actually a career memoir that was driven by the collapse of the firm, and I decided basically to write a three-part case study. It's called Breakdown. Part one is how you go from being a student to a partner in a professional firm. Part two, how do you build an organization, not just a law firm, but what are the principles that I believe in terms of organization building? And three, and this is a unique perspective, which is what are the elements that hold and the glue that holds organizations together that you can only analyze when the whole thing collapses? So that's something I went through. And I've written two, and that book is called Breakdown. I've also written two mysteries, both Shakespeare modernizations. One is Odell's Fall. It's a modern Othello set in a Manhattan cutthroat law firm. And look out for that one. My hero is African American, and who crosses the racial barrier by intermarrying with the daughter of a white Alabama senator, and everything goes downhill from there. And my latest book is called Ophelia, and that is a modern-day Hamlet. And my lead character has just lost his father to a mysterious death, and the father's voice in his head is convinced he's been murdered. And will he step up and fight the murderers for control of his father's drug company? And Ophelia is the lover who is secretly protecting him from the forces of evil.
Wow. Boy, I'll tell you, you know, we are in this place where certainly we're understanding the importance of creativity. But, you know, every time I talk with you, Norm, it's kind of like I'm reminded that there is this essence within us all. You know, our ability to create, our ability to live in the world of possibilities, but even more important, our ability to overcome whatever potholes we step in and then turn to somebody like you to help us get to that next place. Because I don't know what I don't know, especially about where a vision comes from and where it wants to go. Norman, thank you. Personal message, what do you want to leave us with today?
Well, first of all, I'm honored to be here, and it really is my honor to reach out and hopefully touch your audience. And I'll leave you with the message that has always touched me, and that is the people I owe the most to are the people who did not know they were impacting my life, and I always felt I should pay it forward.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program, and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Monday to you. Betty Mathers here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for Round the Sound. Over still on 405 northbound around the Talbot Road South exit. And again, north 405 and those S-curves heavy up through the Kennedale Hills. Good thing it'll break free at the top there around Northeast 44th Street. Everywhere else, traffic is actually looking pretty good. Enjoy your Monday. Stay tuned. Coming up next, after the news and weather, it's actually another hour of the Transformation Talk Radio Network, the Dr. Pat Show, Talk Radio to Thrive By, and Skilled Discussions with co-host Nancy Landrum. Stay tuned.
NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. It looks like President Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin could sit down for their first face-to-face discussions next month. Multiple sources are reporting Geneva, Switzerland is the most likely destination for the two leaders to meet in person. That comes as Biden will travel overseas to attend multiple events, including the G7 summit. A desperate manhunt is underway in connection with a road rage shooting that left a 6-year-old boy dead in Southern California. The mother of Aiden Leos, Joanna Clunan, describes what happened.
I heard a really loud noise, and my son said, "Ow." And I had to pull over, and he got shot.
It happened on Friday on the Costa Mesa Freeway in the city of Orange. Investigators say shots rang out from a vehicle while the boy was riding in the back seat of his mother's car. The child was shot in the stomach and later died at an area hospital. Chicago is coming off an extremely violent weekend. 48 people have been shot since Friday, and 11 of them died from their injuries. One of the victims gunned down was a 15-year-old boy who was shot Friday night. Last weekend, 48 people were shot citywide, including a 2-year-old girl, a 13-year-old boy, and two Chicago police officers. A Tampa doctor is not alarmed about the possible side effect of the COVID vaccine. Rick Hochul has details.
The CDC announced this weekend it's investigating a possible link between the vaccine and myocarditis in teens and young adults who have been vaccinated. Moffitt Cancer Center Dr. John Green says it's worth investigating. He tells the local NBC affiliate, though, the risk of a bad outcome from the vaccine is still 100 times less than the risk of getting the virus.
A new study shows the Pfizer and AstraZeneca coronavirus vaccines appear to protect against the variant first detected in India. British researchers found that two doses of the Pfizer vaccine proved nearly 90% effective. The AstraZeneca vaccine was found to be 60% effective against the same variant. The World Health Organization has labeled the strain as a global variant of concern. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
This is Rob Spears of Conscious Talk. If you truly appreciate sustainable and conscious companies like we do, you want to know about Aloha Bay. They're guaranteed by the World Fair Trade Organization. Their amazing products include Himalayan salt and bath items, chocolate candles, feng shui bodas, and much more. A majority of their jar candles are hand-poured into recycled glass, scented with 100% essential oils, many certified organic. To learn more and order, visit AlohaBay.com. That's AlohaBay.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
Baby, we're loving that new music. That is the new opener for the Dr. Pat Show. Thank you so much. I keep saying Nick Johnson. Thank you for that. And boy, you know, today it's an interesting day, Benny, Jacob, because it seems that when I started the last hour off and I talked about this idea of this eclipse happening and there's something new, there's something illuminating happening. There's something absolutely out there, right? What is it, though, that gets us caught in these little hiccups and sometimes disastrous outcomes? And here's what Nancy Landrum is taking on today, because it is one of the most important things we can learn today in the world. It is about skilled discussions. And even if you're thinking, well, I don't really talk to anybody, you do, because I just had a couple of experiences this weekend. And what it's about is being able to learn this a skill and learn how to move and navigate through a number of scenarios or situations. Because what happens when you're on one or the other side, receiving or providing communication? What happens when you're in discussions? What happens when you don't talk the same language sometimes to other people? Where do you go with that? Well, if you're in relationship, it starts to break down. If you're in a personal relationship with friends or family, breakdown is an understatement. If you're in the workplace, especially about what's going on now, you need to learn how to talk about anything without fighting, and this is something I absolutely believe in. This is what Nancy does. She works with people, whether it's relationships, the love relationship, whether it's friends, whether it's family, whether it's in the workplace. She is that coach, and out of her own circumstances has created tools and approach to help you navigate whatever that water is in communication. Nancy, it's great to have you here today.
I'm so delighted to be here with you, and thank you for that great introduction.
This is a big one.
This is really so big.
Oh.
And it isn't for just normal give-and-take conversations when there's not an issue at stake. But when there's a conversation where you have an agenda or where one of you gets triggered, your anger gets triggered or frustration, then it's time to bring in some skills that give you what I call a skilled discussion. Now, the opposite of a skilled discussion is unskilled, and that's where two people are talking but no one's really listening. Or each person is trying to convince the other that they are right. They might both feel increasingly frustrated because their point of view isn't being heard or understood. The discussion then escalates into a fight, ending in hurt feelings, discouragement about ever being able to communicate well, and maybe some days trying to recover balance in the relationship. That's very painful. Well, in a business relationship, it can hold up business, but I particularly work with couples in loving relationships where they want the relationship to be loving, they want it to last, they want to be able to resolve their differences without hurting each other.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some rules that need to be followed in order to get that outcome. So I wish I could claim to be the originator of these rules. I really can't. I've learned them from other sources that were very generous in sharing them with me. I sent a diagram to your, I think I sent it to your producer.
Jacob's got it, right, Jacob?
The experience diagram.
Jacob, can you put that up?
Yep.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Well, the experience diagram shows at the top events or facts, and we don't fight over facts that we both can see are true. Sometimes we fight over facts that we think are true that maybe we disagree about. But the second level is the thought level. And at the thought level, those are assumptions and presumptions and beliefs and opinions. That's where all fights take place, is on that second level of communication. It's a surface level that functions very well for business most of the time. It functions very well if you're asking your husband to bring home a gallon of milk on his way home from work. But it doesn't work very well if you have a conflict that needs to be resolved. In order to get to the deeper levels of communication, you have to go into feelings, concerns, and desires. And that seems to be the barrier to many people being able to dive from the opinion level is not a very vulnerable level of communication. When you go into the feeling, concerns, and desires, you're being quite a bit more vulnerable.
Yeah.
So this is how it goes. The skill discussion is very different from, quote unquote, a normal discussion. There's a format to follow that's designed to give both persons safety and a chance for both persons to be heard, to say what they need to say, and to be understood. Obeying the rules of a skill discussion is a lot like putting on a seatbelt and shoulder harness to keep you safe in the car. The rules make it much easier to avoid the hurtful collisions experienced in many conversations. Every well-known successful communication skills program has some version of what I call a skill discussion. For number one, there's only one speaker and one listener at a time. And in my version, you use a talking stick to keep clear who's the speaker and who's the listener. So when you change roles, you pass the talking stick back and forth. So when you're the listener, your only job is to listen for the purpose of understanding the speaker's point of view. And this is very challenging for most of us because we want to interrupt, we want to break in, we want to make sure that our side of the argument is heard. But when you do not have the talking stick and you're the listener, your job is to try to put yourself in the speaker's shoes and understand the issue from the speaker's point of view. And then periodically, the speaker and listener trade roles. They continue to exchange roles until both feel heard and understood. And many times, just feeling heard and understood resolves the issue. That's what our primary need is. Just hear me and understand where I'm coming from. And the goal is not necessarily to agree, but to understand each other and have empathy for the other's point of view. So I'm going to jump around a little bit on my outline, Dr. Pat.
Yeah, I love for you to do that because there is, you know, there's a thread of what you're saying. And one of the things that I know you're going to get to, and that is blocks to successful skill discussion, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So can you just comment on just one thing that I think gets overlooked a lot? You and I are having this conversation today. And this, I've already told you how powerful this is and how important it is to learn. If I'm sitting here and I'm listening to you and you're speaking and I go, or I roll my eyes. See, we think communication is I'm nodding my head at you and I'm in full agreement. That isn't the case. But body language and expressions, and people have, you know, look, many folks don't even know they're doing them. They've been doing it so long.
Right.
Right? Where even if you have a different communication style, emotionally, those are I'm not listening to you signs. Correct or not?
Absolutely correct. In fact, on other programs, we've talked about the value of treating each other with respect. And when you smirk at someone's comment or you roll your eyes or you, you know, sigh, what you're doing is creating a very nonverbal, disrespectful response to what they're saying. And it shuts down the communication. You're not doing your job as a listener unless you're willing to genuinely try to understand where they're coming from, what their point of view is. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah. I mean, it goes on a lot. And the only reason I'm acutely aware of it is, you know, like you, I have made more changes in my life in the past, what month are we in? In the past, I'd say, month than I had made in the past 14 years. And, you know, you and I have also had an experience. I mean, I've gone through 2 knee replacements. And, boy, if you don't understand the value of communication and discussion, OMG. I mean, seriously they were going to do the wrong leg. So what I'm talking about is moving from a very practical but emotional, and how do you come to that place where you can communicate without coming in and saying, I can't do anything right, Nancy. I can't do anything.
Well, it takes a grown-up, Pat. You know, we all have a kid inside of us, and that kid only wants their own point of view to be understood and wants it understood right now, and isn't willing to wait and put out the emotional effort it takes to really listen to the other person for the purpose of understanding them. Even if you don't, you know, you don't agree with them, it's possible to understand their point of view without agreeing. And that takes an adult. In fact, one of my statements to my couples is you have to go back to kindergarten and be willing to take turns. You know, one of those skills we learned in kindergarten was that you have to take turns with the toys or whatever, standing in line or whatever.
Oh, my gosh, don't bring me back there. By the way, I'm in a room, you can't see it now, but if you look over to the left, I have three talking sticks. And I realized in moving, I've got these three beautiful talking sticks, and I'm not using them.
Oh, boy. Okay. We have a wonderful opportunity.
Wait till I get back in the office next week, and we start to be able to meet in person. I want to take a short break when we come back.
Okay.
I want to talk with you about, we've established the importance, and you've established some guidelines. But I cannot emphasize enough that when you have guidelines, there's also discipline. I'm hoping you're going to talk about this today and some exercises to help us. But more than that, you work with people. You help them. You have real examples. We'll get into that much more when we come back. Benny, Jacob, let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to shift your current beliefs about death? From debilitating pain and loss? Follow Angie Corbett-Kuyper as she shares that through choice, present moment awareness, and keeping an open mind. Anything is possible, even in death. Tune in to Beyond Proof Radio with Angie, redefining death and loss every first Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more, visit BeyondProof.com.
Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharge phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Mind to Heart with me, Craig Richardson, carves a pathway from your mind to your heart to activate that innate compass to overcome whatever life sends your way. As an intuitive life coach, I am ready to guide you to an amazing life. Tune in live every second and fourth Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about me, visit CraigERichardson.com.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Pat. Hey, are you loving Shades of Spirit Radio? Well, mark your calendar. Shades of Spirit goes live in a new time slot every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific time on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
What?
Yeah, you heard that right. Psychic medium Jamie and Spirit Walker Nicole, 5 p.m. every Wednesday. Live readings, giveaways, oracle cards, and lots of fun. So be there. Call into the show at 1-800-930-2819 and visit ShadesOfSpirit.com.
It's time to shake out your money-making truth on Soul Wisdom Abundance with Jennifer Bloom, creating wealth from spiritual health on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show is more than your roadmap to success. It's your compass to abundance, your joy, and ease. Jennifer Bloom teaches you about the soul's relationship to money and wealth and how improving that relationship serves both you and the world. Learn more at JenniferBloom.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. Nancy Lantern joining me here today, Skill Discussions. I want to just say, for those of you just tuning in, there are two things I want to say. One, you can go to Nancy's website, nancylandrum.com, and this is really the body work that Nancy does to really help people fine-tune skills in this area. And it doesn't matter what the situation is. You know, you'll be able to see how she works with couples, how she works in relationships, and what that looks like. And this isn't always about everybody kissing and making up. Sometimes that isn't going to be the case. But how do you communicate in a respectful way to each other? How do you get through the good times, the bad times? And this is what she's been doing. You've heard her do previous shows on why she does this and what she's learned from her whole, from her life. But right now, this topic right here about skilled discussion, it is so very important, because it doesn't matter where you are on the radar of your life. There are things operating now in the world that have not operated before. And so how do you have these skill discussions? Nancy, did I leave anything out that you want to say about how people can work with you?
Well, the easiest way is going to the website, nancylandrum.com. You can email me at nancy@nancylandrum.com. Or my business phone number is 951-239-1134. So
awesome.
Thank you. I wonder if Benny, if you'd put the experience diagram back up just for a moment.
Okay. Jacob, that's you, I think.
Oh, Jacob. Sorry. Okay. The importance of dropping down into the feeling area is so important, because it tips the balance from a business conversation to a more vulnerable conversation where you develop empathy for each other's position. The importance of feelings is so important that I give my clients a list of a couple hundred different feeling words divided into about 12 categories, such as anger words, happiness words, discouragement words. Mostly arguments are conducted on the thought or opinion level. It's necessary to become more vulnerable by expressing your feelings, concerns, and desires in order for the other person to get a full understanding of your point of view. It's the vulnerability that encourages empathy, which leads to solutions. And here's an example. My clients, Jarvis and Cassandra, were fighting over money. He was very controlling, tight-fisted with money. She wanted more freedom. When they couldn't seem to hear each other's point of view, I asked Jarvis to tell me about his history with money. As he told about the childhood trauma of his family declaring bankruptcy and then his own bankruptcy after accumulating excessive debt in college, he chose feelings off the feeling list, like he felt humiliated, scared, terrified, ashamed, embarrassed. As he described these feelings, his tears began to flow. Cassandra eventually said, "I've heard the facts before, but I've never heard the feelings." When she saw the depth of his pain over what he judged as money failures, she had much more empathy for his need to have a healthy savings plan. Moving forward, they were able to work out budgeting for both savings and the fund that she wanted, much more cooperatively instead of fighting over the role of money in their lives. That's what happens when one or both persons are willing to drop into that vulnerable area of saying, when this happened, I felt, or when you say this, I feel. Now, I want to make it clear that when you say, I feel like, or I feel that, those aren't feelings, those are thoughts, they're opinions. So just because you use the word feel doesn't mean it's a feeling. So if you catch yourself saying, I feel like or feel that, switch to a feeling word, which can be said in three words. I feel X, period. I feel hungry. I feel sad. I feel abused. I feel happy. Only three words. But when you add the words, I feel like or I feel that, it's not really a feeling at all.
Hmm. Let's do a real example of this for a moment. Because the other part of this is, I feel like you.
Yes.
I feel like you. Nancy and I are laughing. You know, I feel like you, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so let's clarify, because the minute that we go to certain words or certain approaches, it really isn't a feeling anymore. We're moving to blame.
It's an accusation.
Those do not get us to open communication.
Not at all. They close it down.
It's really hard for some people to actually feel.
Yeah.
You know, I never cried growing up. And the other day, Linda said something to me like, gosh, you know, your feelings get hurt, you know, so, you know, like, are you, you know, what's going on? And I don't think anything goes on. I think if you live most of your life not feeling, because that's really what you had to do, and you grow up in a corporate environment where no crying at work, right?
Right.
What happens when you actually learn to feel? But the missing piece, Nancy, that I'd like you to talk about is, great that I'm learning to feel. But you can't communicate about it, because if you never felt and nobody taught you how to feel, nobody taught you how to communicate. Help us a little bit more with how to truly communicate feeling without I feel you, blah, blah, blah.
We'll eliminate that phrase, number one, because when you say I feel you, you're expressing an opinion, an accusation, which is guaranteed to trigger a defensive reaction, escalate an argument, close the doors between the two of you as far as communication is concerned. You can rather say, when you do this, I feel. So when you walk out slamming the door, I feel shattered inside. I'm afraid you may never come back. Those are feelings. It's when this happens, I feel. That's the safe way to express feelings. When Jim and I were first working with the coach that helped us save our marriage, he had about four feeling words. I'm hungry, I'm mad, I love you, I'm tired, and that was about it. So she gave him this two-sided page of feeling words and told him that he had to have it in his lap every time we sat down to have a skilled discussion. So instead of just saying, I'm mad, he had to look in the category of feeling words and say, am I just irritated? No, it's way more than that. And he'd go on down the list until finally he'd say, I'm seething. I'm so angry, I'm seething. Well, that gave me a much clearer picture of where he was. It was valuable information for me to have. And if he was only mildly irritated, that helped me too. I needed to know where he was on the scale of any particular feeling. I've had couples break into tears when instead of, I won't let couples just say, that felt good. Good is too generic. You know, so I give them the feeling word list and I say, pick out a couple of other words that describe how you feel. And I remember one young wife said, when you do this, I feel cherished. And she had tears in her eyes. It helped her go to a deeper, more vulnerable level of expressing how she felt when her husband did something really thoughtful for her. So I want to move on. Well, first of all, there's some complaints about learning the rules of appeals.
Yes, yes. Yep, that's what I was alluding to because, you know, yeah, this is going to be helpful to me, but geez, this is like weird.
Mm-hmm. Well,
where do we go with the complaints about learning the rules?
When you first learn how to ride a bicycle, it's awkward. You know, it's you're not sure you can ever learn to balance correctly, or at least I wasn't sure. Or when you first learn how to, I don't know, open up a computer and write a Word document, it's all new and different. Well, when you first learn the rules of a skill discussion, it feels weird. It's awkward. It's strange. Just because it's new, that doesn't mean it's bad. It's only because it's new. So anything unfamiliar feels strange and awkward. But eventually, Jim and I had to do like 3 or 4 skill discussions a week for weeks on end before we finally resolved the problems that were damaging our marriage. Mm-hmm. And by the time we did all of those skill discussions, it wasn't unfamiliar anymore. It felt very natural. So every time we had a little issue arise, we would immediately just slip into the seatbelt and shoulder harness of a skill discussion without even mentioning it. Just slip into those guidelines so that one was the speaker and one was the listener, and we traded roles until we resolved the issue, and usually it only took a few minutes. One of the other big complaints I hear about skill discussions is that it takes too long. Well, I've had couples with an issue between them for 30 years resolve the issue in a 30-minute skill discussion. But they've been fighting about it for 30 years or unhappy about it.
Wow.
So how much time does it take to recover from a fight? You know, when a couple has a fight, they tell me, and I remember what back in the day, that it would take 3 or 4 days to kind of recover our balance with each other after a bad fight. Or a skill discussion might take an hour. You know, so taking too much time isn't a legitimate complaint from my point of view.
No, because we're talking about learning something. I mean, sometimes we think we just woke up and we got this way. It's just like, you know, how did you get this way? You are like this, blah, blah, blah. And so we take ourselves in relationship and we go through life, whether it's a day, a month, a week, a year, a decade, whatever that is. But this is where we go, right? And then when we go there, the reality of the fact that we are here and we are not doing very well at this, it's as if all of a sudden we're not doing very well at this. We're going to take a short break when we come back. It is, where do you go if one of you wants to take this on and learn? Where do you go if, let's say, the other does not? How do you navigate those waters? And why is it that working with somebody like Nancy helps even get some kind of consensus through that? It is important, right? What did Mom used to say? You can take a walk to take a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. Never understood that till my first relationship. Let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
Caring for someone with a life-altering diagnosis? You are a care hero. Navigating the unfamiliar options can be overwhelming, but you are not alone. Tune in to A Cup of Comfort with me, Trish Lau, twice monthly on Transformation Talk Radio. Let me guide you through your care hero journey by providing actionable information on how to care for a loved one in need. For more information about me, visit trishlaub.com. That's trishlaub, L-A-U-B as in boy, .com.
Did you know that when we talk about the Earth's ecosystems, the most important ecosystem has been left out?
you. We created the ecosystem approach to recapture human potential.
Find us at theecosystemapproach.org.
Join us every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time for the Ecosystem Approach Show with Jason and Patricia on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Learn how to lead a happier life on Miles to Go with Brittany Miles. How to lose to gain it all. Join Brittany every second and fourth Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Listen as coach and healer Brittany Miles shares stories that teach you about surrender. For more information about Brittany, MilesToGoCoaching.com.
Are you ready to shift your life into overdrive and stop wasting your time? If so, then I want to invite you right now to the Body Regeneration Online Academy with me, Tracy Alves. In a world filled with so much information, you can get overloaded and confused, left feeling like you've tried everything and still no results. If this is you, then this platform is for you to help you step into your power, your intuition, and gain clarity. You will learn simple tools that you can use as you walk down the street, and I will teach you how to grow a stronger connection to the God consciousness. Imagine having me as your coach, shifting you, uplifting you, empowering you every week, and most of all, helping you stay connected so you can navigate your life journey with ease and grace. Nothing will be able to get in your way, but you will have a community filled with souls just like you to pick you up when you fall down and support you on your wins. No one can go this journey alone. If you are ready for your live activation, check me out at TracyLClark.com and join the TLC Body Regeneration Online Academy now.
Welcome back, everybody. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on right here on the Dr. Pat Show. I'm thrilled to have Nancy Landrum joining us here today. You know, one of the things that is so extremely important right now is to understand the power of skilled discussions. Those are going to be the things that are going to shape the way you move forward in life with another person. And or whether or not you actually do move forward. Nancy, again, what's the best way for people to find out about you, but also to work with you?
Go to my website, nancylandrum.com. You can contact me with the phone number that's on the website or by email. I'd be glad to call you back and set up a complimentary appointment.
Awesome.
And the free download on the front page explains how to have a skilled discussion. So that may be helpful as far as helping you understand what I've been talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead, Pat.
There are a couple things we talked about, and this is going to show up, I think, now in this conversation. A block to, and you all know this, a block to successful skilled discussions is, one, the need to be right. If you're entering any kind of engagement and you are so hooked on the need to be right, think about this. How much are you really going to hear? How open are you really going to be?
Right.
And then the second is equally important. You know, where is your willingness marker to put yourself in your partner's shoes? So understand what it's like to see the issue from their point of view. What is any of that like? But more importantly, what we're talking about is once you engage in this, you know, there are guidelines. Can you navigate these waters even if your partner doesn't? Can you use feeling words? Can you do it, even if the other person may not know the rules? Nancy, can you?
I don't know why this example came to mind, but for a while I was living in a motorhome in my sister's driveway, and I have two little dogs. And at first she's not a dog person, but she allowed them in the house, and they peed on her carpet. And she was very upset about them peeing on her carpet and didn't want the dogs in the house anymore. And she wanted to talk to me about that. And I had to practice what I preach, which is she doesn't know the rules of a skilled discussion. She was speaking. It was my job to listen. So I listened to her complaint. I listened to her feelings. Because I love my dogs, I thought it was kind of extreme, her reaction. I'll clean up the mess, no problem. But I needed to hear from her point of view of what it was like for her to have these critters in her house that she didn't particularly love. And so I would listen and summarize what she had to say and repeat it back to her until finally she ran out of things to say. And while this was going on in my head, I was thinking, why is this such a big deal? You know, the child part of me, why is this such a big deal? But then I eventually got to the place where this is her home. She has the right to make the rules for her home. And she wanted the rule that the dogs would not be in the house. And so as she finished telling me all of her thinking and reasoning and so forth, and I was repeating back to her in a skilled way, I was doing the skilled part of a skilled discussion. When it was finally my turn to speak, I said, Mary, I understand what you're saying. I understand that this is your home. We are guests in your home. You have every right to make the rules for your home so the dogs will no longer be invited into your home. Now, she didn't know that I was playing the role of a skilled listener, but she felt heard and understood. The situation was resolved, and without it damaging our relationship, because first of all, I love Mary more than I love my dogs, yeah. And I didn't want to damage the relationship with my sister, so I didn't insist that it be resolved my way. I'm glad you mentioned the blocks to the skill discussion, the need to be right, the need to unwillingness to learn. But I've done that in other situations as well where that person doesn't know that I'm using a skill that I learned. All they know is they are being heard with empathy. They're being understood. And I don't have to, I mean, the resolution doesn't have to be the same as the one with my sister. But the important part is if you're in a conversation with someone who doesn't know the rules of a skilled discussion, then you immediately start out by being the listener and trying to hear their point of view from their shoes, their feelings. And often when you do that, it's like you're building up an imbalance in the relationship so that they feel obligated then to listen to you. And when it's your turn to speak, then they're more willing to listen to you because you have listened to them. I have one couple.
That's a great example.
Thank you. That's a great example
because isn't that the essence of how we teach children? Vicarious learning, right? And by stepping into a space that doesn't originally seem like it is a safe space, but then demonstrating that it is, and it's very powerful.
One gentleman came to me by himself years ago because his wife wouldn't refuse to come. She wanted a divorce and was ready to walk out, and he knew he needed help, and he was very humbled by it. So I asked him to write down the interactions that he had with his wife every week, what he did, what he said, how she responded. And I would just say, well, if I were your wife, I would feel this. You know, if I were your wife, I would want to know you cared more about me than the scratch on the car. And over a period of about 6 months, he totally transformed his behavior, won the love of his wife back.
Yeah.
And just a few, not too long ago, I got an email from him saying they were still together, happily married. He made an enormous amount of changes. You cannot, a marriage, a relationship is a closed system. So if you change one part, the other part has to change in response. And in this case, he was changing for the good, and she responded very positively. In fact, eventually their teenage kids turned to her and say, "Mom, Dad's really changed. Do you still love him?" And she had to admit, "Yes, I love him." Mm. The other thing that is one of the passions of mine is when I hear my clients passing on the skills they've learned to their children. I recently got an email from a former client named Connie who sent this report. I'm going to quote right out of the email.
Please. Yeah.
"We've been pretty level-headed with our son, Graydon, talking things out, spending time with him, enlisting him to help with stuff alongside us, and doing the things he'd wanted to do, knowing he's had a hard year, too, like we have. But he was starting to get mouthy, talking back to me and Mike. Finally, Mike had enough, and he started yelling out of pure frustration. They were in the garage, and I could hear things escalating from the kitchen. I walked out to see them both in a full-on argument where feelings were starting to get hurt and tears were starting too. Not exactly how we've ever done parenting. Graydon walked away. I talked to Mike for a bit about it and listened to him and then reminded him that maybe we need to start using some of the skills we've learned with each other with Graydon now. He agreed but wasn't in the frame of mind to do it at that time. So I told him I would help. Before Graydon went back outside, I pulled him into the office and told him I needed him to learn how to talk with us the way Dad and I have learned to talk to each other. And they changed the way they talked to each other enough that the kids had noticed it. I gave him the list of feeling words using the talking stick. Asked for permission to talk about how I felt about his backtalk and arguing, and asked him to repeat what I said, and I would do the same to him. I kid you not, it's been almost a night and day shift in that kid just after one sit down together. I know he heard me because he had to repeat it, and I know he felt heard because I did the same for him. He left feeling so much better, apologized to Mike on his way through the garage, and they both have been so much better ever since. Nancy, your tools work. They help us all feel heard, feel loved, and understood." Isn't that exciting? I get goosebumps.
It's exciting because what we really need to, I think, bring into this conversation now is what the tools can do to a relationship. And this is the part, right? So what is the end game benefit for people? Well, if you really care for that person, and the end game is you become closer, right?
Yeah.
You become closer. You get to learn each other in a whole new way.
Yes.
And then the possibilities are endless. And I want to talk about this a little bit too, because a lot of times we don't talk about, except for your beautiful examples, we don't talk enough about the end game, what's really possible, that level of closeness, that connection, the thing that reminds you how important that person is to you.
Right. Tim and I, we had a dream of what we thought our marriage was going to be, loving forever, cooperative, working together. And it was shattered when we had a conflict we couldn't resolve, and then years of fighting about it. That motivated us to learn these skills because we wanted the dream to be a reality all full time for the rest of our lives. So we really worked hard to change the way we communicated with each other until we had a loving marriage that we wanted to last as long as possible until one of us passed. And that's what I tell couples today. You know, we get married because we're in love, and then the reality of life sets in and you find out he drops his socks on the floor or she doesn't cook very well or, you know, whatever the issues are. And then how do you navigate through those issues so that you can stay in love for the rest of your life? and not only stay in love for yourselves, because that's what you want for yourself, but stay in love so that you're, if you choose to have children, you're rearing children in a loving atmosphere where respect and good communication skills are being modeled for them, so they pick them up like osmosis. You know, they just, they mimic what you modeled for them. They're going to mimic what you model for them one way or another. And most of us, many of us, were not fortunate enough to grow up in families where respectful, functional, effective communication tools were used. So we, you know, pick up what we saw modeled for us or what's modeled on TV or in the, at school or, you know, with our friends. And generally, those aren't very good skills. They don't give us the result we want. We want to feel safe and loved, and we want to be able to tell our partner everything, anything in a respectful way. We want to be able to bring up conflicts and know that it's not going to escalate into a hurtful fight. We want to be able to resolve conflicts in a way that meets our needs but also meets the needs of our partner, like Jarvis and Cassandra did. But unless you have a good handle on these skills, you won't be able to do that. I have one very good friend who ran a marriage conference every year for many years. And she likes to say that marriage is like football. It needs a rule book. And imagine trying to play football without a rule book, without a playbook. You know, somebody just hands you the ball and says, you know, win the game.
Yes.
How do you do that? You need a rule book. And marriage is the same. We need a rule book.
Yeah. I love this because quite often we don't understand that we really are in a dynamic that is very similar to sports or very similar to other things that have guidelines and rules. Mm-hmm. And in their, and the difference is those particular examples, it's very clear. Nancy, in relationships, we have the unspoken rules that if they don't get talked about, become the underpinnings for things that happen, fights, conflict, right? Resentments that build up. So what we're really talking about here as well is coming up with a way for people to not just heal those wounds, but to prevent them.
Yes, absolutely. What I like watching baseball. I'm a Dodger fan.
There you go.
And quite often when they're unsure of the rules, they, you know, go to a higher authority. They put their headsets on and they call back in somewhere and re-look at the play to see whether he was out or safe or, you know, what rule needs to be enforced in order to move forward in the game. And I find that couples really resist the idea of rules in a marriage. And yet we submit ourselves to all kinds of rules in other arenas. When I get in the car and drive, I'm submitting myself to the driving laws of California, and I'll get in trouble if I don't use them, don't follow them.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, you know, what I say to couples, well, is what you're doing right now working? No, it doesn't work. That's why we're here. Then you have to learn the rules that will make the relationship work.
Yeah. There's no question. I play a sport, too. And to be honest, you know, I've seen people lose or be eliminated from a competition because they didn't follow the simple rule of not wearing a white. You don't wear a white shirt in the sport that I play, table tennis. It's a white ball. You don't wear a white shirt. And, you know, when you play a sport like that, the nuances of the rules are really quite how should I say? They put you on the line. Everything from you've got to throw the ball up certain. I mean, there are rules like that that everybody knows to follow. And here's what we're talking about. when you do know the rules and then one of you doesn't follow them, if you don't have an effective way to communicate that, that's when things really start to come down. That's when things really start to crash. We have a few minutes left, and actually I want to ask you about that because okay. I know in competition, boy, I played a guy that he swore I didn't throw the ball up. So every time I served or made a good serve, he would call me out on it. And without a referee, I was doomed. So, look, guide us through this last piece. I know we only have a few minutes left, but that's an important piece.
Okay. So you're asking, what do you do when your partner isn't following the rules?
And you say, hey, dude, you're not following the rules.
Well, there's a skill I teach called a coaching skill where a couple agrees to being corrected by their partner if they step over the line to disrespect or if they're not following the rules. And so Jim and I, as I've said on other programs, my favorite disrespectful way of communicating was sarcastic put-downs. Well, when we decided that we would treat each other with respect 24/7, and this was a few weeks before we finally resolved the big issue for us, we also agreed, I agreed, that Jim could ask me for a redo, respectfully ask me for a redo, if I stepped over the line and began to say something sarcastically.
Wow.
And if he did his finger pointing, you did this, you did that, then I could respectfully say, Jim, please say what you need to say without the finger pointing you. And because we had this agreement ahead of time to submit to each other's coaching, we were ruthless with each other as far as holding each other to this line of respect. It was respect that enabled us to regain our love. I call respect the fertilizer of love. It's the medium in which love grows. Without respect, love diminishes. It goes down. So that coaching skill is very important. If you and your partner have not agreed to that, then something you can do is when your partner is disrespectful or not following the rules, you can ask to have a skilled discussion or just simply say, when you do this, I feel disrespected. When you go to the feeling level, rather than fighting back with counter accusations, then you have a much better chance of getting a positive response.
I love it. Nancy, thank you so much for today. Again, let folks know how they can work with you, and I'd love to know your personal message, what you want to leave everybody with today.
NancyLandrum.com. It's not Lundrum, which often I'm mistaken for a Swedish name, Lundgren. Landrum, LANDRUM.com. My personal message is it is possible to have the loving, lasting relationships that you desire, but you'll have to agree to or submit to learning the kind of skills, relationship communication skills that will enable you to have the loving, lasting relationship that you desire. Many couples, when I ask them, is there anyone in your life that has a marriage that you admire and would like to emulate? Some of them say no. Many of them don't know of anyone that has a marriage they would like to emulate, but they still have the dream of a loving, lasting marriage. That's what they want. So I'm telling you it's possible. I can teach you how.
All right. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you so very much for everything you do. I want to thank you all for tuning us in and turning us on. And what we're really noticing, especially about what Nancy talked about today, has been more important. Understanding the tools and the skills that we can learn and to really agree to them to ourselves and to another is the difference between a resentment and gratitude and kindness, loving relationships, and one that's not. And this is something that you can learn and practice, and you don't have to do it alone. Thank you all for tuning us in. Thank you, Denise. Thank you. thank you to all of you, the best audience in the world. We'll see you next time.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program, and not KKNW. This is...